Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hollywood and Ivy on Marquee features celebrity fans of the Chicago Cubs, hosted and produced by Brigham Avery in Hollywood. Hi, Brigham. We're about to talk to one of your recent guests who has many ties to our community here, doesn't he?
Absolutely. And Happy New Year to you, Bob, and hope all is well with you in Chicago. It's been a great year for Hollywood and Ivy, and 2023 is going to be outstanding. I know we just had Bonnie Hunt and Mary Lou Henner on. Those are amazing episodes. And one of my favorite episodes that I got to do this year, it was an honor to work with Bob Odenkirk. And I've got Bob with me right now. So, gentlemen, well, it's an honor.
Let me tell you, yeah. one of the perks of this job I have is interviewing people that you admire, and I'm a huge fan of this guy's work, going back to his Saturday Night Live writing days, Mr. Show, and, of course, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. You can take the boy out of Naperville, but you can't take Naperville out of Bob Odenkirk. Although the story is that you couldn't wait to get out of there. Good morning, Bob. Is that true?
Well, hi. Good morning, Bob. And it's great to talk to you because you're a Chicago legend, you know.
I'm a myth. I'm just a myth, not a legend.
It's been overblown because you know how it is. You do an interview and you say something like that and they make it the headline. I was talking to a Naperville news reporter and they were, you know, I wanted to be honest. Always a problem when you're doing interviews. Try to avoid honesty. but they asked me how I felt about Naperville and I said, well, when I was 15, I couldn't wait to get out. And I think, you know, it's a healthy kind of attitude to have about wanting to shake things up and find your own life. And things are pretty placid out there. And I wanted to live in Chicago or, you know, New York or anywhere. I really wanted to live in Chicago. And but Chicago kind of scared me, which is weird because we're not that far away.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the big city and all that. And I did say that, but I do love Naperville, and my mother passed away last year there. She lived her whole rest of her life there, and my two sisters still live there. And so I go back twice a year. Mm-hmm. And see them and see my nephews, and I love that town. That's a great town.
Well, now that you've cleared that up, you will be presented the key to the city finally on your next trip, I'm sure. When you did move and you got to Southern Illinois University, tell me how the college radio station provided you with a sort of developing ground for your career.
Well, I was a big Steve Dahl fan. Steve was the king of Chicago radio for teenagers, that's for sure.
Well, we all were big fans. All of us loved him.
Yeah.
And still do.
Yeah, he was a real influence on me because I love comedy and I love Monty Python. And I think my voice is somewhere in between Steve Dahl and Monty Python. And I don't know what the vector crossover there is, but it's me. It's just me. I know that sounds weird because it almost feels like there is no connection between those two. But I maintain there is. I'll have a lecture at the Chicago Comedy Society later this year on it. Radio was a place to play. It was a place to perform and a safe place and a fun place and a place of the imagination. I love radio and even did a podcast with my son last year called Welcome to Argyle that's on Audible. That's very silly and very related to the early comedy that I did and that I loved, like National Lampoon's Radio Hour, Firesign Theater, The Credibility Gap, all that stuff. But I've always loved radio and it was a place to start. It's a safe place to start.
Yeah, and it is theater of the mind. I'll do the example right here. I got dressed up in a tuxedo for this interview, Bob, and I'm sitting on top of our grand piano here at WGN Radio under a beautiful crystal chandelier. So I thought it would be appropriate interviewing someone of your stature.
Well, I can hear it in your voice. I am in a, I'm in a pool in L.A. I've got a margarita in my hand, and the Eagles are playing in my head.
Perfect. Bob, why weren't you ever attracted to stand-up comedy? Because you didn't do much of that ever, did you?
I didn't do a lot of it. You know, I love Steve Martin's stand-up, and there was a great stand-up scene in Chicago. I did Who's On First out in Elmhurst. I don't know if you remember that club.
Sure.
And I did some clubs that have gone away that were there for a short time. And, of course, I probably did Zany's three times. That's it. You know, stand-up for me, just I could never hone my voice. You know, a stand-up really needs to have a strong sense of their point of view on life. And they have to be able to put it into their voice. And I just could never get it down. I was always doing a variety of styles in my stand-up that I did. And it's confusing to the audience. So, you know, it's a basic premise of stand-up is to get your voice focused. And I just didn't want to do it. And I love writing sketches. Second City was my first inspiration. When I was 14, I was brought there to see the show, and it just changed my brain. It rewired my brain watching that show.
Talking about Chicago and Second City, you met Robert Smigel and Chris Farley here, didn't you?
I did. Smigel attended the same improv sketch school that I went to called Second City, the Players Workshop of the Second City. It was affiliated with Second City at the time. It wasn't directly in Second City. And Robert had come out from New York to take classes there. And he had left dental school to be a comedy writer. And he was a great comedy writer even then. So we met. He liked what I was doing. I loved his writing. And we became good friends. And Robert got hired at Saturday Night Live 2 years before I did. And then I worked with him while he was there. And then they read my material because he would pass it around the office, and I got hired there. But, yeah, and then Farley was years later. I never met Chris until I was at Saturday Night Live as a writer for 3 years before I did Second City's main stage. It was a really weird journey for me, which is to say I went to SNL first, and then I came back and did Second City. And Chris was part of that main company, and we hit it off right away. And that's where I wrote the motivational speaker character for him, which was kind of based on what was happening in pop culture at the time with like Tony Robbins was just coming out, to people's awareness and the idea of really pursuing success in that modern way. And then also, it was based on growing up in Naperville and the hippies who used to hang out under the bridge.
I always thought I thought that Matt Foley came from some late night Chicago TV infomercial that you happened to see.
No, it was Tony Robbins just starting to come to awareness, people's awareness. And then it was in Naperville when I was a kid, there were all these hippies they were hippies, Bob. What can I say? What happened to the hippies?
I think they all have homes in Naperville with 2.3 kids now, don't they?
I think so. And by the way, were you a hippie?
You know what?
I
was to be no, not really. I did things like to be different. Everybody in high school was smoking cigarettes, so I didn't to be different. So I went against the grain of the people who were nonconformists. So therefore, I guess I was a conformist.
Yeah, but you were doing it in a defiant way. You weren't doing it because you were a conformist.
I was trying.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess
you were being. You were being you. Well, anyway, the hippies used to hang out down there under the bridge. And I know that sounds stupid. No, they hung out on the bridge. And anyway, I don't know. I pictured that guy there and wrote that scene. And I wrote that scene alone in my apartment at midnight. And Chris was just obviously a wonder doing that that sketch. I mean, that was just a joy. My daughter asked me what's the most fun I had in show business in my life. And it was doing that sketch at Second City with Chris. I played the father, and Chris getting up in your face doing that character was the greatest joy.
He was so wonderful. Unfortunately, I never got a chance to meet him, but we did have him on our old Fox Thing in the Morning TV show here on a remote. We used to do this series In Bed With, where we'd interview celebrities in bed, and Chris was in a bed in a hotel. And, of course, for our segment, Chris managed to get three women in the bed with him, so that was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh. He was going to make something every minute of every day.
He did.
Odenkirk, you mentioned that your second biggest thrill in show business was appearing on Hollywood and Ivy. Is that? Can you confirm that right now with us, please?
Hollywood what? Hollywood and Ivy? What?
He never stops promoting, does he?
No, he never does.
To mention that the reality of that, Bob, is that what you mentioned, Bob Odenkirk specifically, is that talking about the Cubs and coming home after being in a Chicago summer environment, going to the pool in the morning and coming back and watching the Cubs on TV and kind of taking it all in. And that's kind of how you became a Cub fan. And Bob Surratt, that's really how I became a Cub fan, too, and perhaps yourself as well. I wanted to mention that at the beginning of when I first brought him on, is that really captured that essence and talk for a little bit about our interview on Hollywood Now, because just everything you shared, it, the way you paint a picture, Bob, and kind of the theater of the mind you present was brilliant for the show and just brilliant in general. So, you know,
I love talking about the Cubs, and I love going to Wrigley Field. And yes, it's true, Brig. As a kid, and Bob, we're probably pretty close in age. I don't know, a few years older than me. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the Cubs were on in the afternoon when you were a kid.
So it was 1:20 start.
Yeah, and it would be somehow you'd come home from the pool and you'd probably be in the third or fourth inning. And that was every day. It was every afternoon, it felt like. So they were just a part of your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's an interesting thing, and I've mentioned this on Hollywood and Ivy, and I'm happy to promote your show, Brig, because it's a great show.
Love you, Bob. And love you, Bob.
But I'll just say this, Bob, you know, I saw the first time I went to Wrigley Field was for a Bears game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I went to one Bears game. It was always fun because you'd wait for one of the players to run into the brick wall at one of the end zones, remember?
Yes. It's crazy. There's no end zone.
Not a lot of room there. Bob, when you first got the job as a lawyer, Saul Goodman on Breaking Bad, did you think, that's it? This is something I've been waiting for all my life. It's here.
No, not at all. The truth is, Saturday Night Live was the job. I thought, this is it. I made it. And then Mr. Show was, this is it. I made it. I love Mr. Show. It's my voice on display, full display. And then Saul Goodman was just this crazy, I mean, I don't want to say it was a side project, but it felt so tangential to everything I, you know, had prepared for in being a writer. And here I was acting and then being given this sort of hefty script and deep character writing. And it was nothing but a massive challenge to me. And I had if you've been in Hollywood long enough, you're prepared. You're always prepared for failure. So I was ready to die hard on that project. But it all turned out, which is crazy.
It was only supposed to be, a three-episode part, something like that?
Yeah. I was invited to do the part. I was asked to do three or four episodes. Really, the character was going to just help the story make a connection. They needed a way for the story to move forward on Breaking Bad, and they knew they needed this character to come in and sort of reorder things, but then he would go away. That was the thought, and I think they realized that he was useful for that perspective that he gave on the story, but also he was funny. And the show was a very bleak show. You've seen Breaking Bad.
Sure.
And it only was getting bleaker when I got hired in the end of the second season. They were realizing that every character in that story was doomed. And it's hard to care if it's nothing but bleakness everywhere, you know?
Yeah. So are we done now with sequels and prequels for Saul?
I think so. I think Vince Gilligan feels very lucky to have had the success he had writing as much of that universe as he wrote. And he definitely is, he would never say never, but he has moved on. He has a new show he's creating. I believe it's for Apple TV, and I can't wait to see it. And my friend Ray Seahorn is going to be the lead character in it. And so she played Kim Wexler on Better Call Saul. So she's going to be being the lead character in the new Vince Gilligan show. It's going to start shooting in a few months.
That should be great. I'll tell you something, though. As great as you were as Saul, Bob, you know what my favorite Bob Odenkirk role is? Stevie the agent on Larry Sanders. And I cannot get enough of Larry Sanders.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that show was probably, I should consider it transformative for me, too. It was a chance to play something more down to earth. Even though he was a crazy character, compared to sketch comedy, that was pretty grounded. And Gary was such a force of professionalism and hard work. Did you ever meet Gary?
I never met him in person, interviewed him on television. It was a satellite interview. And the thing I remember most about the interview, and I expected him to be funny and to take our questions and come up with some really wild and zany answers. He was so thoughtful and so serious.
Yeah.
And he was really engaging and took the time to answer thoroughly everything we asked.
Yeah, he was serious about his craft and about his life and about trying to be a better person every day. That was he was consumed by it, and it was a good thing to focus his time and effort on. I really loved Gary, and he was an encourager to young people like me. He helped me believe in myself.
Yeah, I thought after he passed away that HBO was going to be rerunning all those Larry Sanders shows, and I haven't seen those on the channel, but they hold up well. Your part was great, of course. Gary Shandling, awesome.
Yeah.
Rip Torn was just over the top wonderful, wasn't he?
Yeah, I loved working with Rip, and I had there's some scenes between Stevie and Artie, that was his character, my character and his character.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a joy to work with that guy. He brought so much energy to every moment. And of course, a legendary actor, and he's done everything. And it was great being on that show. Great being on that show.
Bob, before we let you go, when I heard we'd be talking to you this week, I was thinking that you were probably affected more than most people by what happened to Damar Hamlin, given your experience of a close call with a heart problem.
Yes, I couldn't help but think about exactly what happened to me and the people around me who took me by the hand and by the head, lifted my head off the ground and gave me CPR for 15 minutes and gave me the AED, which is the defibrillator, three times before I got my heartbeat back. I don't know how many times it took for Damar before he had a steady heartbeat. I hope it was once and not too many. But it was very much the absolutely, I can't help but flash back to what happened to me a year and a half ago. So I hope he's going to be okay. Who knows what that was, whether the action, the stress and the action on the field had anything too much to do with it. Or in my case, you know, I had blockage that I sort of knew about, but didn't know it was as bad as it was. So maybe he had blockage as well, but, you know, we'll see.
Well, listen, we're glad that you're healthy, successful, and made it out of Naperville happily, we should note.
Bob,
he goes back, and he loves it.
I'll be back there soon. You can't do that to me, Bob.
Thanks to
people get mad at me for that.
Bob Odenkirk loves Naperville. Let it be known. A great pleasure to talk to you, Bob. We'll be watching for your next project, and of course on Marquise, Hollywood, and Ivy with Brigham Avery. And I'm a big fan. What can I say?
Thanks. I'm a fan of you too, and thank you so much.